www.pacificaradioarchives.org. This is Sonali Kolhatkar for the Pacifica Radio Archives.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings, greetings, fellow stargazers.
Wait for a second. We're going to bring Lee on the... What? I'm up. I haven't done this in a while.
Perfect show.
You ruined my perfect intro.
Sorry, I was watching Barrett hover over the phone trying to decide whether to bring
I was going
to
wait to bring Lee up, but Groovehouse was like, hey, man, I thought you were saying bring him up.
He's part of the show, right? We got to have him for the intro.
Well, let's go ahead and bring him online then. What the heck? Hey, Lee.
Hey, guys.
Hey, we're just introing the show here. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's?
Groovehouse.
All right. So we are now here doing our first show of the year 2015.
We're fully FCC compliant.
20-year anniversary of Windows 95. Yeah. And we have Lee Hutchinson on the phone.
You'll get it right one day.
I will. I swear I will. Hey, I never heard any feedback from you. Did you enjoy your pillows?
I did. There should be a thank you note winging its way to you for listeners who are unaware. Jay's lovely Cynthia crafted some absolutely miraculously amazing Christmas presents for us out of Star Wars fabric. It was just joyous.
Good. I was hoping you would like those. All right.
Absolutely.
So how is, so we're kind of, we're a little disjointed because Lee is, are you in the back of a cab with hookers right now? Or?
I'm calling from the casino of the lovely Wynn Hotel while I'm in between meetings.
In between meetings at the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yes, CES. I'm at the Consumer Electronics Show, one of the largest conventions that Vegas hosts, with probably something like 200,000 attendees, and it's just a massive experience. Syrian.
Oh, we thought you were at a different show. That's why. Okay, never mind. Yeah. I guess we can still talk to you, though.
You think I was at the adult CES?
Yeah. It's going on at the same time. The adult Dex, I think, is what it's called.
No, we're not at that show or CES.
At least not if his wife is listening. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to take advantage of... when do you have to get off the phone to go to your meeting?
I have got about 10 minutes.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to have Lee give us a rundown on what he's seeing at CES in Las Vegas this year. So
give us an intro, too, because CES is kind of... It's tamed down for a little bit, and a lot of our listeners may not know exactly what it is in the history.
Yeah, so CES is the Consumer Electronics Show. It's one of the biggest conferences that Vegas hosts. It used to be back in like the 80s. There were two big shows. There was CES and COMDEX. COMDEX used to be just a massive one. COMDEX has kind of decreased in popularity. I think it still goes on, but I mean, we cover at Arstechnica, where's my day job at. We cover CES because it's the place where, even if there aren't any huge announcements that are like exclusives or whatever, everybody who is anybody and a lot of people who also are nobody have booths at CES. So there's like 2 million square feet of floor space with exhibitors on it. And you can walk around and some of these booths, like the Microsoft booth, and actually Microsoft doesn't have those, but like the Sony booth or like, you know, the big names, they're enormous. They're like, you know, giant apartment block sized booths. And they range all the way down to like, you know, some little random Asian, you know, iPhone cable manufacturer will have like a little stall and they'll be like lines. Anyway, it's an enormous show. And I've talked to a ton of different vendors while I've been here. I kind of focused sort of split on automotive tech, which actually is one of the themes of this year's CES, kind of the Internet of Things and the Internet of Connected Things. And I also talked a lot with the Oculus people about their upcoming VR stuff. I talked with Philips about some fancy light stuff. I know we're not supposed to get too brandy here on KPFT. I've interacted with a lot of brands so far.
So what's some of the cool stuff that you're seeing? Does it seem like there's still a lot of innovation going on, or is it kind of like humming with some previous year stuff?
Yeah, how's the 4K TV market doing?
there are tons of 4K TVs and 8K TVs and curved 4K TVs and curved 8K TVs. There's every kind of TV that you can imagine. And just to give a sense of scale, I know Dwight has called in from CES in years past, but the show is so big that if you wander through one of the three giant convention halls, you could take all day and not see all of one of the halls. It's just like this never-ending, just like tidal wave washing over you of blinking lights. It's just amazing.
That sounds nice.
It's neat, but I've got to turn around and then write news out of all this stuff. So it's really difficult to figure out, you know, how to focus down and kind of bore through the overwhelmingness.
Is focusing on the automotive or mobile tech in terms of cars and stuff, is that helping you narrow your focus, or is there a lot of that too?
There's a ton of that. Everybody is showing off their connected car stuff. That's kind of the thing, right? It's cars that hook up to your phones and phones that hook up to your cars and cars that hook up to your smart houses. And it's this whole idea of, I mean, that's kind of it. You guys have heard the phrase Internet of Things, which is like one of the most terribly bad, undescriptive phrases in all of technology. It's right up there with the cloud as far as like bad phrases. But I mean, the concept of the Internet of Things is, you know, there's devices have some amount of intelligence and connectivity built into them. So things like cars are able to, use cameras and recognize the world around them, and self-driving cars are part of all of this. It's just sort of this whole big nebulous picture of everything becoming connected to everything else, and then eventually the machines take over and we all die.
So has Microsoft not returned? Are they still out of CES?
Microsoft has kind of a funky presence at CES. So, like, they're here, and you can take meetings with them, but they don't have, like, a big show floor presence. Because it used to be Microsoft did the keynote every year. Like, Microsoft did the CES keynote. That was like, you know, the sun's going to come up every day, and every year Microsoft does the CES keynote. It was just the way things were, and they quit in 2012. And ostensibly, they also quit attending, but they didn't. They're still here. They're still taking closed-door meetings. They just don't have a big floor presence like a lot of the other vendors do.
When I was at CES probably about 6 years ago, Microsoft had a big set of tents set up.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I mean, well, it's so crazy because, like, there's a lot of the big companies have, like 52-foot, like, truck trailers out in parking lots, like in the big Las Vegas Convention Center parking lot. And you go out there, you meet with them, and inside these trailers, they've got, like, you know, like a fully branded experience of whatever they're showing off. You enter into, like, this crazy new world of, like, where they've decorated the inside of a trailer with whatever their, like, thing they're showing off is. It's just, on top of being in Vegas and it being, like, that unreal in the first place, it's just, like, this whole other funky technology world. I'm glad I come out here and cover the show, but I've been here since Sunday. I go home tomorrow, and I'm, at this point, I'm absolutely so just like sensory numbed, I'm ready to go home.
You'll hear slot machines for, like, the solid 4 or 5 hours once you get out of Vegas. They'll just keep ringing in the ears.
Oh, yeah, it's that, and it's, like, this announcement and, you know, flashing lights and technology, and I'm pretty good. My brain is full. I need to go home and dump it out.
There was a pushback against, I guess they were called booth babes a few years ago. Is that still the case? Have they totally eradicated all, like, unnecessary females that don't have an active part in IT out of the booths?
So that was kind of a big thing with Comdex. Well, a lot of the companies would use scantily clad women to pitch their products because the attendee list, at least back in the day, was predominantly male. And that was, you know, it's Vegas, so that's the way you do it. And you don't see nearly as much of that anymore, but it's still there. I mean, there are still some companies where you'll be walking down, like, one of the middle of the convention center aisles with booths as far as you can see, left, right, forward, and backward. And, like, oh, that one over there has, like, four women in hot pants standing in front of it, and they're selling, what are they selling? They're selling iPhone cases or something. You know, it's just kind of random now. It's weird.
So is the Apple Watch casting a large shadow over the CES this year? Because I know Apple's not there.
I haven't heard a thing mentioned about it, which isn't unusual. CES is at such a weird time in the product cycle. You know, it's in January, right? So what company is going to make a major announcement, especially something like Apple's Watch, in January, right after, you know, the big holiday buying season? And before, like, too early in the quarter to affect quarterly results if they're on a calendar. So it's kind of funky. You get these companies that are, like, making a huge amount of noise, but most of them don't have anything big really to announce. It's just noise. Look at us. See our cool stuff. Mm. Come into our booth. Give us your business card.
Have you got a swag bag going?
No, I've been avoiding swag. I've got so much swag at this point. I'm buried in swag. I got a couple of things. So at one of the vendor shows, I got from the Mozilla guys, I got a stuffed little, like, red panda Firefox guy. So that's, like, nice. The limit of my swag this year. But he's adorable, so I'll take that.
Are you going to come to the Geek Gathering on Friday?
If I am alive on Friday, I will do my best to drive out there, yes.
So if you want to come talk to Lee about his experiences with CES and if he's there, if he hasn't succumbed to Vegas.
If you can't make it, send the panda.
I'll do my best.
Bring the panda.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Well, we don't want to hold you up. You know, we got things to do, people to see, and slot machines to fill.
All that tech vendor liquor isn't going to drink itself. I've got to go
Have you been invited to any cool after parties or anything?
That's one of the other really funky things about CES is the show floor is huge and loud, but if you're going to get any real information and do any business, it's always at the closed door stuff, the after parties and everything. In fact, that is where I'm going right now, is to one of the parties with one of the big brands to do the hobnobbing and talk with the people not on the show floor and hear the real stuff.
Right, not the kind of flash and bang stuff that gets people's attention, but like the hardcore nitty gritty. Right.
What they'll tell you after a couple of drinks, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt, and I'll take the drinks, absolutely.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, not like there's a problem with getting free alcohol in Las Vegas.
No, it kind of flows like water. In fact, I'm sitting here. I'm kind of at the edge of the casino. I'm sitting in front of a big Wonder Woman slot machine, and I've had to wave off like the waitress, like, twice to come over and just bring me drinks because I don't have to go drink. I don't need to pre-party. There's going to be enough partying going on without the pre-party.
This is what he has to survive to make it.
The rough life of a tech journalist, huh?
Wonder Woman.
Well, throw a quarter.
Something like that.
Is the Wonder Woman slot machine, is it a quarter slot or dollar slot or what is it?
It's a, what is this thing? I don't know. I'll take a picture and text it. Oh, it's a nickel slot, but you can bet up to 500 credits at a time. So it's like a nickel slot, but you can bet like billions of dollars at once.
Well, play a nickel for me.
Okay, you got it. If I win, I'll just tell you that I lost.
Of course you will. All right, Lee. Well, thanks for your time, and we wish you a lot of luck. Hope you learn a lot of things, and maybe when you come on the show next week, if you're still alive, then we'll cover this a little bit more depth.
Absolutely. Thanks, folks. You guys have a good show. I will do my best to be there on Friday.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, buddy.
Bye.
All Adios. Right.
So Lee Hutchinson on the ground at CES in Las Vegas. I mean, I've been to CES one time, and it is absolutely overwhelming. Have you ever been to South by Southwest? Like, you know how when you go to South by Southwest, you immediately realize you should create an agenda if you want to do anything. So you have to really think about it. CES is that times a million. If you want to get anything done, you kind of have to know what you're going to do going in there. Because if you just walk around the show floor, I mean, you'll see a lot of cool stuff, but you won't really learn anything because people are, you know, kind of block these people out, and you don't have a chance to talk about it unless you've made appointments and things like that. So it was really just, well, I went in there and it was just overload and I didn't know what to do. And so I walked away feeling very unsatisfied about my visit to CES. So
then you got a radio show and you're taking it out on everybody in tech.
No, I think I was doing the show that time. I met up with Dwight.
Yeah. It wasn't that long ago.
No, but I DEF CON has been a lot more fun in terms of going to a tech event.
Well, what's really weird is, see, my dad was in electronics sales and all that from way back in the 80s, and so he was going to COMDEX and CES before it hit, like, when it was really a trade show, when it was sales reps from all kinds of different companies and places going to Vegas or Chicago. I think there was a, I think in the summer was Chicago or something, and they were just going, it was to go see what there was to sell. And then suddenly in the 90s, it caught fire where people like noticed all the big announcements that were coming out of there, and people started announcing new products and it got wild. But before it was just, you know, he went and, you know, you'd ask him about it. He'd come back. Sometimes he had cool stuff. Bring back some cool little things from it, but
bunch of guys in white shirts and skinny ties and looking like IBM engineers, probably
middle-aged guys who, you know, sales guys, and then the people running the booths and going to the different meetings for the particular lines they represented. So, but you know, one of the things, it looks like the stuff from just kind of perusing what people are talking about, it sounds like, yeah, curved screens are the like crazy everywhere big deal thing.
I think Jay saw one. I like the idea of it, but I think my main issue with them is that just because of the curvature, until they get like a bendy curved screen, the focal point's kind of fixed. Like, you need to sit right at that focal point for that screen, otherwise the illusion is kind of destroyed, isn't it?
Yeah, I think screen.
If only we could go someplace and see these things demonstrated.
Well, what? I think the problem, there's a weird, somebody wrote this article, so, you know, this wasn't my idea, but as I read it, it's like it made more and more sense. It seems to me that the manufacturers of displays have gotten mixed up in their heads between computer monitors and TVs for your living room.
Yes.
Because they're doing all the things that they talk about as a big deal for the computer desktop, they should be doing for the living room. And because a curved display on your desktop, where you're sitting in the focal point, well, you have a nice big 8K curved monitor that replaces 8 monitors that you could, you know, you can really use the real estate. And then, but then the guys that are making displays, though, they're doing 27-inch 5K monitors, which is not, you know, I know Apple's doing it and it's beautiful. I've seen it in person and it's amazing. But as a developer, I want more screen real estate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like a 32-inch 5K screen to be on my desk so that the stuff's big enough. Because if you use it to get more space, if you use it like it's intended, pixel for pixel, well, you can't read anything because all the text is just, you know, one tiny pixel on that giant screen. And so it's sort of odd. You know, again, it seems like they're pushing the technology. They're doing it because they can mm-hmm. and not because they need to.
They also seem
to be different.
They seem to be stuck at 16 by 9, too, for computer monitors. And really, that's a throwover from the movie industry. And I've heard a lot of developer friends complain they want more. And they're doing a lot. Jay Lee is probably going to get really popular again because a lot of people are starting to flip, you know, those rectangular monitors over on its side to be able to get much more scroll to where you can see more. And it's a little bit more usable space.
For web pages, yeah.
That's what I
had a... I'm a big proponent. If you want to have, if you have an extra monitor lying around, if you go to any of these, you know, Fry's or any of those kinds of places, they have these USB video cards, and
for
that'll
pretty
let
cheap
you hook
too,
up
right?
for yeah, $25 to $50, and it'll let you hook up a monitor if you for a USB port. So you can add, you know, if you've got a Mac, unless you have a Mac Pro, you can only have one monitor in addition to your machine. If you have a like, if you have a high end. MacBook Pro, you can do two, I think, and it'll drive them. But otherwise, you've got one. If you have an iMac, you can have one exterior monitor. Well, with a USB card, with the USB external USB video card, you can add up to four more monitors. Now they're not going to you don't want a game on it, but the refresh rate doesn't matter on a web page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to have, you know, 120 hertz refresh when you're looking at web pages. So I had this extra monitor, and I basically turned it vertical, and I use that to look at long web pages. And you know, the monitor was sitting there, and $50 for a, you know, for an external, plug it in, drove it. You can do more monitors. I think you can do up to six off a PC if you just want to have, you know, the problem is having enough horsepower to run the apps to be on all those screens at one time. I'm sure you could bog it down, but very useful, and it makes sense. But you know, I also like, though, the ability to have, you know, with coding, where I can have I have a 27-inch Dell that's basically their knockoff of the 27-inch Apple. You know, they're really nice. Not the 5K, but they're really nice, you know, like 2,600 pixel wide by 1,600, something like that. And having two windows side by side where I can have my code on one side and the page off my dev server on the other, where you can just go back and forth and reload and see.
Yeah, even having up a debugger results. And having enough, you know, having enough room to where you can see the entire thing without having to alt tab. You do something, you see it immediately. I like that.
Yeah,
you know, that's...
and not having to flip between one mm-hmm. and, you know, go back to your code, because there's always that time where you can. There's the problem when you're switching like that is you incur overhead. You mentally you have to go, okay, which program are we going to go to? Oh, you pop your mail up. Oh, well, I just got a new email now. Suddenly,
boom, distraction.
45 minutes is gone, and you didn't put a new line of code in. So, you know, big curved monitor, you know, the 5K, something that was, you know, 30 or 40 inches wide that was made to take up your desk. That would be cool, but they're not making that for computers. They're doing these curved, but they're doing curved 27s and curved 30s, and so you want to kind of go, does anybody use these products so that they can understand that? They don't get Apple stuff. Their stuff looks cool, but it also works cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the place where some of them have kind of, no, we just got to come up with the cool new thing. And it's like they're figuring out it doesn't work. Because I'll say it, the Microsoft thing, I don't think the ads are effective, but that their device, the kind of yoga devices, the ones where it's a laptop and a tablet,
oh,
and you can use it in the different forms. That's actually pretty cool. It's very mm-hmm. thin and all that, but it's not enough by itself. It has to be useful for that. And their operating system, you know, right now the market's kind of speaking. Or there's the Sharp smartphone that doesn't have really a bezel. That's one of those where, you know, if Apple, some of it is, you know, the market's not fair. If Apple did that, people would go nuts for it. Sharp did it, and it's out there, and people have seen it, and it looks nice, but... And Sony, I guess, has put out some stuff with kind of very minimal bezels. But it's kind of, you know, nobody really, you know, it hasn't made a big splash. And so just cool stuff isn't enough. It's got to have that extra where it's integrated, where it's more useful, where it's, you know, doing something better. You know, that's why every new lightweight, ultralight laptop looks like a MacBook Air. Not because it's cool, but because the form factor works. And so I don't know where the people on some of this stuff, like I said, they haven't figured out, you know, part of why you want an Apple is because it's going to do what you want it to do. You can imagine what you're going to use it for. Nobody goes, you know, well, I won't say nobody, but so few people go, yeah, you know, that new Apple laptop, it's just going to go perfect on my, you know, because my desk, I've designed it just so, and I got to have that to really fit to balance out the feng shui of my office kind of thing. No, they use it. It looks cool. And yeah, they kind of, you know, lay things out around it, but they aren't picking it just because of the looks. That, you know, there's the usefulness and all that. And so, you know, a lot of these other companies just can't seem to figure it out. It's kind of Microsoft is just, it's like making an elephant dance. They haven't quite figured out how to make it light on its feet. And, you know, that I think it's interesting, you know, you think about it. Lee is a technology journalist. He works on the internet.
So he's got a job on the internet?
He's dealing with change at that rate. You know, it's not like the old days where, you know, the magazine, they were writing like next month's magazine while the first one was on. And the fact that this is kind of overwhelming, that it's overwhelming to him, somebody who's used to drinking from the internet fire hose of technology news, you just kind of wonder, at some point, is that going to get past CES and kind of get where consumers are having that kind of problem? You know, it sounds like there's a whole lot of Chinese companies exhibiting at CES that really want to get into the U.S. market. I heard a report on smartphones. Their big thing is to bring in smartphones, Android smartphones, with the kind of specs of like a Galaxy, you know, the latest kind of Galaxy, a Samsung Galaxy flagship for $100. With specs that you could, you know, they had, this was, I heard the report was on NPR, the person running the booth, you know, the reporter was a little bit skeptical, you know, people think stuff might be cheap, you know, the cheap stuff is cheap, and they ran one of the benchmarks that's used and then showed this is what the benchmark is on, you know, the Galaxy's phones, and here's ours, and it, you know, obviously it's radio, so you have to take their word for it, but I'm not thinking they're just lying to, you know, help some $100 booth, you know, some small booth at CES to do their stuff.
Well, it's got to be that the components and all that are getting, you know, cheap enough, and with open source hardware, being able to put things together, you should be able to come up with some.
I think, well, Pete and I were talking a little bit before, and not that they're cloning everything, but a lot of this stuff, a lot of the components, a lot of the parts are made over there anyway. So, I mean, if the factories are tooled up for that, you know, not necessarily they're going to go and, you know, clone a phone, which they have been known to do. But, you know, just the screens and everything. So I'm sure, you know, the supply chains over there, they can put together a phone that's the same specs as, you know, the phones that we're bringing. But what they're doing is they're cutting out a whole lot of profit by the U.S. companies. They're doing it cheaper. They're not having to go back and forth. And they probably know how to negotiate prices with other Chinese companies a little bit better than American companies do. And that's Japanese companies especially.
And don't have, well, and they, yeah, they don't have their government presumably kind of weighing in on their side to help keep their prices, what they make up. So they kind of make maximum profit, and so they've got the expertise. I mean, that's one of those things that's sort of the tough deal about it is, you know, yeah, we design it here, but at a certain point, once you know how to, you kind of go. It's one thing to go back 5 years, and if you told somebody kind of what an iPhone was like, they still couldn't really build one. But nowadays, over there, you've got a whole bunch of people who know exactly how to follow the design to get, you know, to squeeze out that last bit of space or whatever, you know, because at some point that's the interesting challenge going forward is that's I think why we're seeing curved screens and 8K screens and all that stuff is you can't make, there's a point we're coming up on where you can't make a laptop any thinner without having the problem of picking it up by the corners and having the middle sag or making a phone thinner. If you made an iPhone 6 or, God forbid, a 6 Plus any thinner, you would have problems by putting it in.
At some point, it becomes a knife. It becomes a weapon, you know?
Well, or it's just not going to stay square. You know, it's not going to stay rectangle. It'll be curved without unintentionally curved like the bend gate thing, except for real, instead of like 9 people out of millions kind of thing. It just happened more. So some of it starts turning into, well, what else can you add value there? I guess the Chinese are kind of the ultimate fast followers, but at some point they've got, although Lenovo and Asus were showing some really interesting laptops that were thinner. But like I said, I think we're getting down to where they're going to shave that last millimeter off and they're done. You can't really...
Well, here's a consideration on this cheap Chinese technology. We've already seen a problem with the USB exploits.
Oh, that's true.
So you have this hardware coming in that's got great computing power, and if you have an actual computer or a smartphone or a tablet, it takes nothing to build some malware right into it that just, it's only, you know, the man in the middle attack become, you become the man in the middle.
It's fairly well known. I mean, there was for a while a lot of gray market Cisco branded gear that was coming out of China that looked just like Cisco gear, only it had just a couple of extra parts soldered onto some of the main boards, or actually, I guess, built onto the main boards that no one really knew what it did. And that's, you know, people were thinking those were back doors. And it's the way the government's set up, it's not unpatriotic for the government to help private industry spy and do things like that. It's not unpatriotic for private industry to help facilitate the government putting in things to send over around the world. You know, so if they've got networking equipment in all the major, you know, throughputs, all the major intersections of the internet, that's a great place to have that.
Right. So you don't even, I mean, you know, even your best network guy, you know, might know how to configure a Cisco router one way, you know, nine ways to Sunday. But he's not going to know that it has extra hardware built in there that's designed to capture. And, you know, unless you're doing some kind of real-time network shaping and traffic monitoring to see where things are going, you know, if you're running a router or a switch, a router on a big corporate network with, you know, hundreds or thousands of workstations connecting to that network, sending requests out for Facebook and God knows what. Certainly some packets can go sliding around that says, oh, here, we just took a screen cap of all of the files in this one folder. We'll send them over to these people. You know, where's your stuff going? How are you controlling where your traffic is going?
Right, because what, wasn't it, was it Cliff Stoll that was the one he tracked down a hacker group in Germany? And it was because there was like 22 minutes of computer time on the shared system. This, you know, this is 20 years ago or more, that wasn't accounted for. And he was ADD enough to go and, you know, figure out whose time was this and how was it used. And he tracked it down. And it got him to, well, nowadays you think about a network guy. How close are you going to really track what's flying by on your network?
Too much traffic. You've got to use aggregators.
Gigabit Ethernet flying by with, you know, a gig of data. That's where...
You almost have to know, like, where the potential problems are and filter and look for that and look for traffic that's going to maybe... But if you're doing business in China, you can't look for everything that's going to Chinese IP addresses.
Right.
Necessarily. Or, you know... What's legit and what's not, and where does internet traffic go, and where are these data packets supposed to be headed, and how are they getting there? So,
well, on the hacker news front, I don't know if you heard where the FBI released a little bit more information about why they think North Korea was behind the Sony hack.
Right.
And what it came down, it was the director of the FBI, and I guess one of these things I'll say, because they quoted him from a speech, and he said, you know, I don't usually say I'm sure about something. You know, most things you won't hear me say that, but I'm sure about this. And then he said, why? And the thing that he said why was that most of the time, the Guardians of Peace, they used proxies, and they had, you know, they were using things to obscure their identity, where it was coming from. He said there were a few times when they slipped where they either had a network problem or where they actually, their direct naked IP was used to do something and they could track it. And it was IPs only used by the North Koreans. Now, it's one of those, I'm on the fence. I mean, I think that you should be able to figure out and prove that it came from, you know, if you're going to say that North Korea did it, except it's sort of one of those whodunits where who else really benefits? Because it's one thing I'd be more inclined to think that maybe it was somebody else playing a game if they had benefited, but all they did was jack Sony. So it's not like if they had stolen the credit card numbers or stolen that data and then were doing something that made them money, then I would say, well, don't confuse organized crime that just happened to hit somebody that this government didn't like for that government attacking them. But given that there was no benefit on the other side, makes me think, you know, that it does sort of narrow it down to North Korea without even having to really do to, you know, trace it all
some
back.
People really don't like Sony, though.
Has well, anything
but that was the other thing on the whole Sony hack is like, okay, if they were hacking Sony, was it an attack on America and it's a Japanese company? So was it really directed, if it was North Korea, was it an attack on the U.S. or was it an attack on Japan? But going back to my original point, I'll just go back to the Chinese thing, the Chinese hardware. One of the things, so you have these cheap tablets, you have these cheap electronics coming out of China, and you don't know that you can trust what's on there. I mean, it's the same type of situation where, like, Petco or whatever, one of the pet stores just recently, like this week, banned the sale of all dog toys that were imported from China. They're not going to sell them anymore because they've been found to be toxic, because their quality control is one problem in how they're making this. But, you know, if you can't trust the vendor, then I think that's where, you know, mm-hmm. start talking about the value add of a name of brands. You know, and I was talking with my wife about this, like even about like news sources on the internet. You know, are you buying an Apple computer because, you know, and you're talking about, you know, are you buying an Apple computer because it looks cool or it does a good job? But you're also buying it because, you know, at least in some regards, you trust Apple has quality controls in place. So you, when you download your apps from the App Store or from the Windows storefront or Google Play, you're trusting that there's some kind of quality control going on that it's going to protect you, and that's why you're buying these things.
Yeah.
So you get a $29 tablet. It's got an ad from Micro Center with a coupon for a $29 Windows tablet. It's like, it doesn't instill me with confidence.
Well, yeah, one of the things on the cheap smartphone, so $100 smartphone, similar specs to a, you know, high end sort of flagship phone. The thing that I think is going to keep that from being a mainstream thing here in the U.S. is the kind of, I think the best way I would characterize it is the sort of the Chinese not understanding American style corruption. And by that, I mean all the smartphones, every single one of them that they talked to these people that had the ones that were kind of the interesting ones, they pointed out, they flipped it over and opened it up and said, you know, dual SIM, look, you could put multiple SIMs in this phone. And it's like, there's, you know, that there's none of the American providers, major providers of phone stuff are going to sell a dual SIM slot phone out of their store when, you know, what is it, the on the iPads, Apple came up with this clever, you know, SIM agnostic fake SIM thing that you could change who your provider was with your tablet for data, which makes sense.
Oh, except if you do it on
Verizon, it immediately locks it to only be on Verizon. So you can't change it without going back to, you have to go get a SIM, I think, to go to another provider. And so, you know, it's just kind of funny. It's sort of the, like, on the one hand, they understand how to squeeze down the manufacturing cost and be like crazy cheap, but they don't understand like the sort of elegant, high-end, complicated American corruption that keeps the phone companies from letting you, you know, even Apple doesn't get to do what they want. They're kind of a gorilla, so they get more of what they want, but they couldn't sell a two-SIM slot phone. You know, they couldn't get AT&T and Verizon to sell a two-SIM slot phone, even if they were doing iPhones for $100. Yeah, and I mean $100 not subsidized. You know, because, and free, you know, it's like Verizon, oh, we're going to give away these free phones, you know, $100, you take your two-year contract, free phone, oh, with a second SIM slot, so you can go with another company. Yeah, no, they'll never do it.
Hey, running back to the Sony hack, has any information come out about Lena? Like, I've been not watching the news the past 2 or 3 weeks, but there was the Norse Security, which I think was a UK security company, said that, you know, we're going to pursue this as your normal intrusion, you know, kind of incident response. And they started looking at, you know, a little bit of motive, but they started looking like who would actually have the ability to do this and the amount of data that was exfiltrated and how long it took and the complexity of everything. And they think they tracked it down. And this, I haven't heard anything, but they thought they had tracked it down to a woman, possibly by the name of Lena, who was in Sony for about 10 years, was let go around May, and a small handle, you know, small circle of other people that might have helped her. Now, whether she was working, you know, in cahoots with other groups or whether she just gave them the information, but that made a lot of sense to me. And that was the first thing that I saw that actually struck a chord where I was like, okay, that is one of the ways they can actually.
They said a lot of stuff, yeah, there were hard-coded passwords in the.
Yeah.
Well, the other, in some of the malware, I think, though, somebody else raised that kind of the question, and I think if you somebody else on the particular report said, notice what the FBI says. They don't say that they're certain that North Korea, you know, did it, perpetrated it. They're certain that North Korea is responsible.
Behind it, okay.
And so I think that I would not be surprised. I mean, if you think about it, if you're a country, what's your first thought is, well, can we get somebody to be, you know, to turn, to flip for us? And if somebody's, you know, if they got canned, the disgruntled former employee, you kind of go, well, gee, it doesn't take a lot of cash. You don't have to grace a lot of cash on somebody unemployed's palm who's got an axe to grind with their former employer. It's like, that could make sense. You know, that would be a door that opens it and makes it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's social engineering and then there's doing it old school, which is, I think, you know, real old school, like John Le Carré spy novel school. And I wonder if that's not part of – I think that's part of what sort of tangles this up is, yeah, there's people for hire out there. Because I think – who is it? The one that was doing the DDoS on PlayStation Network.
Yeah, Microsoft. Yeah. That didn't end well. The Lizard Squad. And then they came up. So there was the Lizard Squad, and then I forget it. There was the Finest Squad came up, and the Finest Squad supposedly came up and took down the Lizard Squad. But the big hacker, you know, brouhaha was that they were the same people. It was all a kind of a big publicity stunt to drum up business for their pay-for DDoS service out there. So that didn't go over well with a lot of people.
Yeah, the tough part, if you're going to advertise your illegal business by doing illegal things, it's hard to kind of take credit and set up a storefront to capitalize. Come by our storefront.
And that's the biggest thing is, you know, everyone says these sites get hacked, but, you know, in as far as Microsoft goes and as far as the PlayStation Network goes, I don't really consider that a hack. What that is, that's sending a whole bunch of people to a shop, to someone's house, and just overwhelming the front door to where normal people that belong there can't get in and out. That's not really a clever hack. That's not anything. Now, they did hack, I'm sure, a lot of people's computers to take over the computers to get that much traffic. But that's really all they're doing, and that's becoming a nuisance, and there's not much we can really do on the internet about it. I mean, just like we've got some DNS issues, there's not a lot we can do to, you know, get around, you know, packet storms and large, you know, distributed denial of service attacks.
Well, I have a couple of servers, and I host sites for a number, you know, for a lot of customers, and including the ones for this show, and lots of WordPress sites, and the oddest thing, you know, over the break, you know, while we weren't broadcasting, one WordPress site that I host, I got a notice from my, you know, internet, my provider where they, that has the servers, you know, where they live, that apparently it's not so much a vulnerability in WordPress's RSS feed stuff, but it was used to be a DDoS tool, and apparently there was a DDoS attack on somebody where they used 160,000 WordPress servers to do it. And the thing was, it's not like something was wrong and didn't work like it's supposed to. It worked exactly the way it's supposed to. They just sort of tricked all these servers into, you know, they had to be configured a particular way, because like I said, I've got tens of WordPress sites, and one got, because, you know, when I see that, you think, okay, well, how come I haven't seen a notice, you know, WordPress vulnerability or whatever. Yeah, no, it was just that they wanted you to close down this particular, they were using it to close down this particular setup and stop. But the fact that it didn't even make the news, you know, but there was a takedown notice. If they hadn't changed, if the person, this site I don't actually maintain, I just host for somebody, if they hadn't reconfigured their stuff and made the changes that were suggested, the ISP would have taken down the box or would have taken down their site. And so, you know, it's kind of like interesting that something that serious kind of percolated around via email you know, reporting to the individual sites as opposed to something that hit the news.
Was that the RevSlider plug-in one where the Google banned, Google blocks thousands of WordPress sites following malware attack? This was December, middle of December. caught wind of it. It says security firm SecureEye reports that Google has blacklisted over 11,000 malware-infected WordPress domains, and over 100,000 sites in total have been affected by a new malware campaign from SoakSoak.ru. It was exploiting a vulnerability in a WordPress plugin called RevSlider.
Yeah, no, this actually was a different thing. When we're on the break, I may log into my tickets and I can call up the ticket, because they explained what the deal was. They explained what the deal was with it, and it was basically that somebody was sending like malformed RSS requests that when they sent the request and the server responded, it went to the wrong place. You know, so if you sent the bad request to 160,000 servers,
redirect, yeah.
And apparently, you know, it was persistent, so that once it got started, the server would kind of keep trying to do its delivery. Anyways, you know, so you didn't have to keep pinging it to make it do it. So you get 160,000 servers, and you're talking servers, so they're on backbones, they're on big mm-hmm. pipes. Then you could get huge traffic with very little, I think, with very little effort, because your requests are just tiny. You know, oh, give me the RSS feed, and so, you know, a few K, and you get back big quantities of data from these WordPress sites, and it was clogging the pipes. But we've got about 10 minutes or so before we. I just looked and so.
Circle full back around to the CES thing. Jay Lee found some, I don't know where you came across them, but some really, really cool early compact computer ads when they were hawking their portable computers. And it was like they had, like, I think it was called the Portable 2. And he's got like a 22 pound fish, and it's John Cleese being John Cleese comparing, you know, a compact portable computer to this dead fish. And it was pretty awesome. Did you just trip over those on the internet?
Over them on the internet. They were apparently some UK ads for Compaq, and there are probably about a dozen or more of them. And John Cleese from Monty Python fame is the one that's doing the narration or doing this. And they're ridiculously funny. They're very Monty Python.
We need to put those up on the Tech Bytes page, or get those up there somehow on the Facebook page so people can go out and see those. But those were definitely worthwhile. That makes sense, because I thought, how did I miss those? But if they were in the UK market in the 80s, yeah. that's why.
I don't think you're going to shed some of those on the TV. I think there's one where somebody actually got killed with an arrow in his chest.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
And John Cleese was trying to come up with a what do you call that when you assign a word to every letter?
An acronym?
Yeah, well, he was trying to turn Compaq into an acronym, but saying that computers, something, I have to find the ad, but he was doing a... But then it was very British, because they were using Q and Compaq. They showed a model of people standing in line in a queue.
Yeah, which is very... Americans don't. Americans line up. We line up. We don't queue up.
Hold on. Let's see. So bring up the volume on this.
I'm going to tell you about Compaq's new Portable 2 computer. It's such a marvelous machine that it would be quite unfair to compare it with another computer. So, we've decided to compare it with this fish. Now, the fish weighs 22 pounds, which makes it extremely portable. It will fit snugly on the passenger seat of your car, or when traveling by train, on the luggage rack. By coincidence, the computer weighs exactly the same. So, nothing to choose between them so far. But how much can they remember? Well, the Portable 2 has a memory of 4.1 megabytes.
Megabytes?
A number of megabytes, as I'm sure you'll agree. The fish, on the other hand, can't remember a thing. Hardly surprising, really, because it's stone dead. I suspect he could give you a megabyte of... Oh, sorry. Anyway, I expect you've been wondering just how much IBM software this fish can run. The answer, I'm afraid, none. The Compaq Portable 2, however, can run all IBM's most popular software 30% faster than IBM can. Ha, ha, ha. So, if you're looking for a powerful portable computer that doesn't smell,
We suggest you buy the Compaq Portable 2. Of course, choice. Sorry, I was miles away. Of course, the choice is yours.
I like how he mentions that it's portable because it will fit in the passenger seat of your car or, if you're on a train, in the luggage rack. That is what constitutes portable computing at the time of that computer. But yeah, there's a whole channel of all of those. If you Google search John Cleese Compaq ads, you'll find them. And there's a whole channel of all of them. And I will see about putting those up on the Facebook page and also maybe up on the Geek Radio site. So we're getting close to time to take a break. We still got a little bit of time. We do want to remind you that you can call in if you want to talk to us about something having to do with computers. We are amenable to taking phone calls at 713-526-5738. If you've got a good question, if you do have a problem with something that you want to try to get sorted out, we're still taking those kind of calls, but they got to be good problems. I mean, we're not going to teach you how to double click on Netscape Navigator and get on the internet. But if you if you've got a good challenging problem that you want to have us try to apply the brain trust to, we'd be happy to take those calls. Or if you want to discuss any of the topics that we've gone over, or if you want to bring up a new topic, 713-526-5738. We're going to be on the air for another hour. Shortly here, we will be taking a short break to do some station business as we wrap up the first hour of our program, the first show of 2015. Do want to remind you also that the Geek Gathering, which is usually the first Friday of the month, this month we chose to have it on the second Friday of the month, so it'll be this Friday at Cons, and also it's going to be cold, so there will be fire.
Oh, so we're not going to slice open a tauntaun.
Well, we could do that, too.
Maybe we'll see. Can we just wait and see on that?
I also saw on Facebook Khan trying to pawn us off on the restaurant next door.
He did say that, well, Khan's going to have entertainment around 10 o'clock. Somebody's playing at the place. But he said, I think he's just trying to promote that business, too. There's the New Mexican restaurant next door.
Right.
And he said that if, you know, it's too cold and there's not enough room, you know, if we actually did exceed capacity or whatever, he thought that the Mexican restaurant next door would also be happy to have some people sitting in there. They do sell good food, and it's a nice space. And it didn't, the last Geek Gathering, it didn't look terribly crowded. And I think they're staying open kind of late.
I'm sure at 9 o'clock on a Friday night is not like a, hey, you're keeping out our waves of customers that are coming to eat dinner. You know, obviously I'm sure they have, you know, they have a decent number of customers, but to like pack the place, they can't do it like the geeks could, I'm sure.
Right.
That time and place.
So Groovehouse.
Yeah.
Last show of the last year, you were out. You were gone.
Right.
Yeah. So you went and shot Cheap Trick. How come I didn't see those photos?
I don't know. I don't run the website that I shoot for.
The Dream Police.
But usually when you do the photos, you'll usually put an update and say, here's my pictures from the concert.
Right. As far as I know, they haven't done anything with them yet.
Oh. Really?
I don't run the website, so I don't know what that guy is.
I understand. I know he's out of country. Oh, are you talking about, did you shoot for KLOL?
I did.
Oh, okay. So you didn't shoot for Houston Press?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was one thing not that I regret going to England for the holidays, but I would have liked to have seen the Cheap Trick show. So I was kind of, you know, most of your concert stuff, I don't care. But this one, I wanted to see these pictures. Did he have the five neck guitar?
Yes.
God,
yes. He had that. He had the guitar that looks like himself. He had the, you know, Checkerboard Explorer, the regular.
Did it look
Explorer.
Like he was having a little hard time holding that five neck guitar?
Actually, I didn't see him play it, so I don't know. But he did have it at the concert.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you shot your three and left.
I shot three, and then I stayed for about 10, and then I left.
Oh, okay.
There was about 15, 20 songs. It was about an hour and a half show.
Yeah, that last show of the year was fascinating because Flicted was not well, and Groovehouse was off shooting that, and so I got to play both their parts. I got to be in the other room and run the board, which it's been so long since I ran the board that's a totally different board. The one I last touched had like wood on the ends. And then basically every piece of gear except the microphone, I think, was, and the clock on top of the board was different than the last time I did. And then also answering the phones, I must say I got a new appreciation for doing both of their jobs, especially if you're trying to participate in conversations on the air.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I saw the emails flying back and forth about that show and the people falling out, Flicted being sick, Groovehouse being out. And I thought, oh my God, how is this going to happen?
It's going to be the best/worst show ever.
Well, I was actually in the airport getting ready to board the plane, and I was looking forward to listen to the intro. And then I got to listen to the intro of the show, and it sounded like everything was going pretty well. So I was like, whew. I felt much better after that.
Yeah, some of the stuff's better. I was, you know, at least you don't have to diddle around with carts anymore. Yeah. You know, that's how long ago it was that I really ran the board, is that there actually were still cart machines in there and all that. It's actually kind of slick. I mean, I was impressed, because before it was a little bit ancient, and now it's a lot more snappy. But when you're trying to do, you know, fancy stuff, because we were doing more things, usually basically you start the show, you pot down and turn off the, you know, once the intro's done, you're kind of done with the CD player. But no, we played a couple songs, and we played the song. Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. And then the only thing I'd been worried about
was Lee's first time to hear it.
Yeah.
How did he react? Did he appreciate it, or did he look like he was going to take another...
confused.
Yeah. Ears bleeding just ever so slightly, just a little trickle.
It takes a couple of years to get that one really where
it's on my like playlist of Christmas songs. And our Christmas Eve tradition is, you know, I basically take my phone, plug it into the stereo in our living room, and run this playlist. And so the best part is that, you know, you're sitting and, like, everybody's sitting around opening presents. It's a very kind of Norman Rockwell moment. The extended family is all gathered around doing stuff. And in the background, you hear, you know, fall on your knees kind of thing, just kind of bleeding in from the background. And you can see, and then you look around and you can see other people noticing the song playing. It's pretty cool.
That was pretty awesome.
Wow. You know what? I didn't mess up and play anything out of turn.
He didn't screw up when he was on the board.
Of course, the plus side for me is Saeed set up the like mid-hour, the stuff that plays at the top of the hour. Actually, there was nothing at the top of the hour between 8 and 9, but there was to start for the end of the show. So that was nice, too, so I didn't have to like go in and set up the next hour's thing after the 9 o'clock.
That's nice of them. All right. Well, there's that music. Allegedly, that music means something. It has a significance, mostly just to tell us to wrap things up and let's get out of the way so we can do the top of the hour business.
To get on with it.
But I'm sure there's a hidden meaning in there somewhere, too, that Flicted secretly chuckles to himself about the fact that he gets to play this on the show every week. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break and take care of some business. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Technology Bites Radio here on KPFT. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
...100 years of drug prohibition is enough. Please join us at noon on Wednesday, December 17th at the Harris County Criminal Courthouse, 1201 Franklin. From KTRK-TV, Houston.
The time to legalize marijuana use in Texas is now.
Mayor of Houston, Anise Parker.
I think that public opinion is going to shift on marijuana and it will be criminalized in very short order.
Houston Police Chief Charles A. McClellan, Jr.
The taxpayers can't afford to build jails and prisons to lock up everyone that commit a crime. We do believe, those of us that are law enforcement executives, that the war on drugs was a miserable failure.
This will be a rally against prohibition, not a protest. We'll have attorneys, activists, and patriots in attendance. Please join us Wednesday, December 17th at noon at the Harris County Criminal Courthouse. Contact Dean at drugtruth.net.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
And now for something completely different.
I'm part of that.
Hello. Hello.
Lady.
Now for something completely different. Barrett?
Yeah, I was just talking about how my Xbox One didn't work around Christmas. Yeah.
During the DDoS.
Was it brand new or did it?
Yeah, I got a new Xbox One.
You got a new Xbox One? I didn't hear
it. Yeah, it's still newish and you've been gone.
You didn't invite all of us
in
over.
Here. A Groove House, I think I had a Groove House. Groove House was a friend from when I had an Xbox 360, so I was turning that on and he popped up once or twice. And I think you're my friend on there. I don't have a lot of friends. I've got like three friends on there because it's, like I said,
it's new.
We
started playing the Lego Xbox games.
Really?
Those are fun.
So you're subscribed to Xbox Live still? Or
You
can maintain a subscription?
I
need to renew mine and maybe get back
We just bought a couple of the games themselves.
Can you, so you still have a 360,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So they talk to each other, it's okay? Everything's good?
The Xbox One games do not play on the 360, but the 360 games will play
on
the
One.
Xbox One.
Okay, yeah. So Barrett, you have new technology, but you must play the older games.
Yes.
If you want to play with
them. So we could be playing, like, there are games that Groovehouse could play on his and I can play on mine that we would both be able to be in the same virtual world. We'll play online, I'm sure.
Right.
Oh,
but
I see.
But he's just saying the actual game.
If you had Call of Duty for the Xbox One, mm-hmm. and he had Call of Duty, same game, Xbox 360. If they
should
make,
probably work, yes.
You should be able to play together.
So Titanfall plays across the different platforms, or do you get a different one?
Don't know that much. I mean, it's still pretty new, and I've been so busy at work, I haven't gotten much of a chance to mess with it. But here's one trend I don't like. So I got one of the ones that came with like an extra game. It was one of the bundled games. So I'm like, all right, I'm actually going to get a real game, like a DVD game. And they don't do that anymore. You get a download certificate. And, you know, these games are, you know, between, you know, I guess the really tiny freebie games are like 20 gigs. You know, the normal standard size games these days are 50 gigs. So the thing is, you don't really even own the game necessarily anymore. You know, like at least you used to have something in your hand that you could put in it. Maybe there would be updates you would have to do after the game. But now it's like, you know, I don't feel that bad about people that were hurt by Lizard Squad. Microsoft's the real one because you're a kid, you wake up Christmas morning like, woo, let's go play a game. You put it in and then the Xbox One has to download all these updates just to even get out the gate. And then it's got to go and download, you know, like the game it came with, 50 gigs of download on Christmas morning with everyone else trying to do that. Throw in all the other, you know, the problems.
That's a pro tip if you're giving your kids any online technology for
Open
Christmas.
It.
Get it online before Christmas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Run all the updates.
Ooh,
patch
smart,
it.
Smart, smart.
That would be
And get some adult game time in on your own before wrap it back up for the kids.
Well, you know, you
make sure it works.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Send the kids to grandma's or out of the house, go play in the street.
Well, I think that's a valid point, though. I mean, it's like, you don't think about it. It's like you go and you buy something like that. And I had that experience with the Xbox 360, and I had that with some of the games that I would buy. You know, you plug it in and boom, it's got to do all these updates. And then you put the game in, and boom, it's got to do another mm-hmm. update. And so you're...
It's like it's the next day by the time you get to play
your
game.
And
you know?
If it's on Christmas Day when everybody's mm-hmm. doing that...
Yeah, at the same time.
Then you're gonna, and then if there's a DDoS going on at the same time as that, mm-hmm. it's just... Christmas is ruined.
Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. I think with the digital, it's they're calling it, what, DLC or digitally downloadable content. You can't really take that and resell that in a game shop. That's one of the things, too. You know, you don't physically have that anymore. Yeah. And my main concern is there is going to be a time, you know, when the Xbox network isn't around. And when that day comes, you know, at least, like, I've got a mothballed, you know, Saturn, Sega Saturn. I can pull that out. I can plug it in. And as long as something hasn't shorted on it, I can play those games. The issue now, though, I mean, you know, when there's no Microsoft network around, you know, in 15, 20 years, or it's changed, all that's obsolete. You cannot play those games anymore, and that's kind of that's what I don't like.
Sadly, though, a lot of those old, all the old cartridge games, there's a battery in that cartridge that you got to replace. Or
you could do that, though. Yeah.
On the other hand,
remember what you were doing.
All those 80s Sega games just got made available online, playable via the web. So.
Oh, so I haven't gone out there. Yeah, someone dumped a ton of games, right? So what's the?
I haven't looked at the.
Well, and there was some other thing that was promoted in December where it was like arcade.org or something that had like had thousands and thousands of video games from classic
so Sonic Classic, like there's a
I remember that music.
Is there like Flash versions or
let's see, so I'm trying to see if this is actually the same one. Play Sonic. God, it's all there. I guess it's using Flash to do it. But yeah.
So is that site safe where you are right now? Is that the main site that does it?
I'm not sure if this is the one that I'm trying to. There was a big. I saw it kind of percolating around while I was on vacation. Let's see. Archive.org, console library, Sega Genesis.
That's it. Archive.org had a whole thing where they added all those.
And Archive.org, as we know, is trustworthy. Unless you're looking at a cached copy of
thousands of free in November, thousands of free video games now playable on
Arrow, the Acrobat, Afterburner 2, Aladdin. Oh wow! And Cyber Cop. Good God! Yeah, so you got all these games you can play online now. So if you go to archive.org/details/Sega_Genesis_library.
2,400 MS-DOS video games.
Internet Archive Console Living Room is really cool, too. So it's like the Internet Archive stuff with, I think that's what that is an offshoot of, all the old consoles, all the old games.
Yeah, so you know, at the rate that technology is advancing, sure, all the games that you love and you're worried about not being able to play anymore are going to be delivered via Flash or some other new technology on the web, and you'll be able to do it right there.
I guess I can just ask the robots in 20 years, like, hey, can you fire up an Xbox One game for me? And
well,
say,
it would be cool
polishing,
if there would be some kind of like way to connect your Xbox controller to a laptop. Since it's wireless,
there's a ton of like, there's actually Bluetooth classic Nintendo controllers that you can pair with your desktop or laptop to get that full experience. It's a lot like what was it, Back to the Future 2, which I know everybody and their brother has mentioned, but I'll pile on in case you're the three people who haven't heard it. You know, this 2015 was the year in the future that they went to in the second
right
movie.
yeah this is the actual one, not the one that all the misleading memes that keep coming up every year.
Right, this time they're actually, which means probably you won't see them because they won't do it until next year when it's misleading again. But anyways, you know, if you remember, there's one moment in Back to the Future 2 where these kids are fooling around in the corner with this video game and we got it to work. And they're doing it, and then Marty goes over and you know, rocks the game. It's a gunfighter game, and you know, blah, 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 blah. And the kids, you know, he like puts the thing in and turns around, you know, impressed with themselves, and they're like, "You have to use your hands? That's a baby game." So in 25 years, what's going to happen, Barrett, is you're going to want to play an Xbox One game, and the kid's going to be like, "Geez, I've got all of those games on my watch. When are we going to play a real game, you know?" And you can say, "Well, we'll play that while your 4 petabyte game downloads from Microsoft Network for Christmas, kid."
On a separate note, on another note, I want to say that, you know, the iPhone 6 Plus is the travel phone.
Mapping and just ease of accessibility or what?
Battery life. And, yeah, the maps and stuff. I was able to buy a SIM card when I was in London. And I was able to use my phone, take all the photos I want, upload them, and do everything I wanted all without having to recharge the phone. Unlike my previous iPhone 5, which would pretty much die about, you know, three quarters of the way or half the way into the day.
Do you have an on-the-go cable with software you can download from your DSLR to your phone? It's awesome.
I've got one for my Android phone, and it's neat.
Say that again?
It's called an on-the-go cable. It's a micro USB to regular USB cable. Couple it with some free software that you can get from the Play Store and
iOS, Apple.
And then you just download your JPEGs. It keeps the RAW files on the camera, on your card, but all your JPEGs are downloaded to your phone, and then if you have to do something with it right away, you can just do it right there.
Edit it on the phone. And that,
yeah.
I guess that would be a reason to pony up for the 128-gig iPhone 6 Plus.
I mean, but then
that
when you're done...
That is the 128-gig iPhone.
And then when you're done, you just delete everything you don't need to keep, and you've got the photo that you want to share with everybody.
All right, cool. That sounds like a really cool thing, and probably better than...
Cable's like $3.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We happen to know...
Software is free.
Now, on my Sony A7S, it will... I can configure it to be a Wi-Fi hotspot, and I can connect my phone to it and run an app, and I can pull photos.
Well, there you go.
Right off of it.
That's
but
probably that, better.
But it's a battery suck.
Right.
So the cable actually sounds pretty cool.
Pretty neat. I saw it in action, and then I went and bought it myself.
How fast is the cable? Is it like USB type speeds, or can you get Thunderbolt speeds?
USB to micro USB won't help, Jay.
Because this is Thunderbolt, but
I'm sure they make them for the
right. But you know, it would be cool because you know if you could take a nice picture with your camera and you want to share it immediately, that would be a nice feature. One of the things I've noticed when I'm traveling as a photographer and as a smartphone user, I'll go out during the day and I'll take all pictures with my pro gear and I'll get all the shots that I want. But I still want to share kind of like in real time what I'm doing, so I'll take a picture with the phone because I can upload that right away. So I kind of have this. In my social media, there's kind of like this echo where, here comes an Instagram photo of this iconic scene. And then later that night when I'm back at the hotel and I'm processing images, here's the good photo of that same thing. But, you know, most people, they don't care. It's like they'll praise an Instagram photo as much as they'll praise a well-done
photo.
The
one that you spent all the work, the hours on.
You know, some blurry photo that you took.
That's the greatest photo in the world.
That was amazing, man. Thanks for sharing, dude.
Yeah.
So
crickets when you show the panorama.
Right.
You spent hours editing the panorama that you stitched together.
Oh, I thought that was the same photo.
Well, there was an interesting article in Wired that kind of goes to with the six, the things that make that a good... Am I pulling on your...
What did you call that cable again?
It's for Android, it's called on-the-go cable.
OTG. Yeah, what it does is it takes, like, you know, your... The flip side of the host side, and it turns any smartphone into an actual USB host. So you could plug, like, a keyboard into your phone. You could plug whatever you're into your phone. And instead of being, like, just the receiving end of that, you become, like, a full-blown USB port.
Well, there was an article in Wired Gadget Lab this week that struck me and kind of dovetails with what you just said, which was the article says, never buy a phone again. And what they're talking about is, what about, do you really need to buy a phone like that if you're always in a place where there's LTE and that you could get a tablet and pay for a data plan, which is a lot cheaper, and not have to have a phone at all. In other words, if you had, obviously they don't talk about the issues of, lugging around a 7 or 10 inch.
Yeah, I'm not going to carry a Merce.
But if you think about it, it gets close.
You're talking about doing phone calls over the internet?
Basically VoIP. Well, and how often do you actually talk on the phone on your phone anymore?
Okay, here's something maybe one of you guys can clarify this for me. Before I left on my vacation, I, of course, forwarded my phone to my Google Voice so that I could get an email notification that I have a voicemail that somebody's trying to call me, like the alarm company telling me my house has been broken into or whatever. And I got a call, that I needed to deal with. It wasn't like a horrible emergency or anything, but it was a call that I wanted to respond to. And I didn't want to make the phone call on the phone because then, it just cost too much money. And so I was going to go ahead and fire up Skype and do it. And I was struggling with Skype a little bit, but then I did it through Google Plus, and it didn't cost me anything. Mm-hmm. I was able to make
over the internet.
But I thought with all the phone services that if you called to a landline, you had to pay for that.
Were you calling U.S. number your... Yeah, well, that's the thing. So because you've got a U.S.-based Google Voice number, you can call U.S. numbers regardless of where you are on the internet, how you get onto the internet. That's free. Now, if you were to go in your Google Voice number and call the pub across the street from where you were, that would have been long distance and cost you a little bit.
Yeah, because basically you're online, and your connection that you're using for Google Plus... to make that call is going over internet connection to a PBX system.
Right, but I thought that any time it changed from voice over IP to a landline.
But it's in the U.S. Originally, they did charge you in the U.S. You had to pay for calls to landlines, but they dropped
Skype
that a long time.
Is Skype the same way?
Yeah. From Grand Central, I've never had to pay. Skype, charges you. There was, because see, on mine, I don't know if it still shows it, but it used to show that I had a 10-cent credit.
Right.
They gave you when you signed up that was supposed to be for calling
landlines. Yeah.
And I think they dropped it fairly quickly.
Does that mean that Google Voice will do the same thing?
Yeah. If you have the Google Voice app on there, basically. Yeah.
Google Voice app. If you go to Gmail, there's a little phone icon down on your Gmail, and I make phone calls from Gmail.
Yeah.
Now it's integrated. But before, you had to use the actual Google Voice app. But that's what I used when I went to Russia two and a half years ago. I called people in the U.S., and people called me.
I mean, I don't call people in the U.S. when I'm in the U.S., much less when I'm traveling. But so when it kind of came up that I had to, I was amazed because I had bought a data sim when I was over there. It was $48 for 3 gigs of data for a month. And so I was like, that's great. And I was using hotel Wi-Fi, but I had to make this call. So I fiddled around with it. Next thing you know, it worked. I'm talking to the people I need to talk to, and it's not costing me anything. I didn't have to put in a credit card and buy some credits.
I think eventually international calling is going to go the way of long distance calling in the U.S. Give it another 5 or 10 years, and it shouldn't be
5 or 10.
Less than that.
See, originally you couldn't do voice. They wouldn't allow you to do voice over the cell network. You had to be connected to Wi-Fi or some kind of direct network connection. You couldn't do it over 3G. Even if you had 3G, you couldn't do it. LTE didn't exist then, but you couldn't do it over 3G. And then I guess they relaxed. Basically, the phone companies relaxed finally and said, okay, we'll let Skype and Google and other people actually make apps that can make phone calls over the cell network. They don't cost anything, but before that you could make those calls, but you had to be connected to Wi-Fi.
One of the things they're doing now, and pretty much all the majors have picked it up. T-Mobile's gotten it earlier, I think, but it's a feature of the phone. You can do where you can call over Wi-Fi. So like my T-Mobile at home, I don't get great reception for the cellular, but you turn on, and on an iPhone 6, it's like, I think, and you have to have iOS 8.
They were that was supposed to go all the way back to the iPhone 5.
But then
they bailed on that.
Oh,
and
did they?
Yeah, the 5S is the last. You can't do it on a 5C, I don't think. So it has to be a 5S or a 6.
I'll have to check. I know that it had to have the iOS 8.
Yeah, but you can't do it on a 5 because I have iOS 8, a 5, and T-Mobile, and it doesn't. Apple didn't allow it to work. There's no. You know that slider button to turn it on? It's not in the phone. It's not in the phone.
Because it's very nice, though. It uses it. So at home I've got that. And then you can be in a call and leave and get in the car and drive off.
It'll auto-transition.
And it automatically transitions to the cellular network, and you can't.
Yeah, I was looking forward to trying that, and then they said I couldn't do it. So I actually went and searched, poked around, and I found some on the T-Mobile forums where people were talking about it, and they said in the early beta versions where people were testing it and stuff, you could do it on the 5.
Because it was supposed to be coming. It was T-Mobile, one of the updates or something.
T-Mobile believed that it was going to be available for iPhone 5 and up, and then all of a sudden at the last minute, Apple pulled support without telling T-Mobile, evidently, is from what I read on the forum, and it was just a 5S and up. And so people with 5s couldn't do it, even though originally they had been able to do it.
Well, you know, you just sort of back to. Well, I guess we've got a.
We should take
got a
call.
We'll take them, and then we can
come back.
Continue.
Hey, do you want to tell everybody on the air and me as well what your iPhone hotspot password is?
Oh, me?
Yeah. My phone's about to. My long life battery is. I've been running a hotspot over here and to get on the internet. How are you getting on the internet, Barrett? Are you actually on the Wi-Fi?
I'm using the KPFT.
I'm on the Wi-Fi.
Are you on the Wi-Fi now?
Mm-hmm. It's not showing up for me.
Which one?
KPFT 2A or something like that.
A2?
Yeah, is that working for you?
Yeah.
I got into CNC 232111, whoever or whatever that is.
Was it free?
No.
Although,
oddly, the rat hidey hole is gone, or whatever that was. The little the rodent Wi-Fi hotspot is no longer up there.
What was that one?
All right, I just connected to the... I might be connecting to that KPFT Wi-Fi, so I may not need Pete's. But all right, let's go ahead and take this call and see what we got here.
All right.
I'm on the KPFT one now, too.
Groovehouse?
First up on the show, starting the second half, we're going to kick it off with Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay,
or we can.
I have a problem.
Okay.
I think my computer was taken over. It sounds like it. I had downloaded AVG system performance package they had on their website. And when I downloaded it, I used it one day. Okay, fine. It didn't do it. It did what it's supposed to do, but I didn't want it, so I tried to delete it. Could not delete it.
Okay, AVG has a PC tune-up software.
Right.
Okay.
It cleans up the registry and all the problems and everything else. Right.
All right.
Well, then I tried to remove it. It would not be. It could not be removed through add remove programs.
Why? So, what was it saying?
It just would not do it. It wouldn't do it at all.
Go ahead.
I checked back on AVG website, and they said they had a removal tool.
Okay.
I downloaded that, removed it, no problem. I used the computer the rest of the day, turned it off and started it two or three times and everything else, and right about 1 o'clock in the morning, I thought, okay, I shut it down completely. I got up the next day, my wallpaper was completely different. There was no wallpaper folder. There was no Firefox was completely gone. Thunderbird was completely gone. All my documents were completely gone. Everything was gone. I had everything up, and it started up in less than two milliseconds, I guess, when I logged in. And now I have nothing on there. I'm trying to put it slowly back together. The question I have is I have a backup that's about 6 months old. I haven't backed it up. I haven't really done a whole lot to it. But the backup has all the main items that I need to put back on here. I'm thinking about going back to a factory reset and doing it that way. And then downloading everything from the external hard drive onto the computer. All the sites that I've used, I've been using them for years. I have very seldom do I go anywhere else. And the only different program that I've used was the AVG tune-up suite.
All right, what's the question?
What happened to all this stuff?
Well, I believe I've been hacked. I'm pretty sure of it. But now...
No, you know, but my gut tells me... that you installed this AVG tune-up software, which didn't do you any good, and then you went and found a tool to remove AVG.
On the AVG website.
Was it on the AVG website?
Yes, it was.
All right.
And it tuned you up, and then it
tuned you up
it.
And set you on your way.
It tuned me right out.
Well,
the next day.
One of the things, I know when you install some of these, especially like antivirus stuff, they can become difficult to remove because they're running, and you actually have to shut them down before you can uninstall them. So you actually have to get out of the program. And since it's a background application, it can be sometimes confusing to figure out how to turn them off.
Well, and they want to protect themselves from being removed by other methods.
This had a 24-hour limit on the test. It was a test download.
Right.
And if I wanted to buy it, I could go ahead and purchase it, which I did not want
right,
to do.
Right, but still, regardless, even though it may only work for 24 hours, it's still there, and it's going to nag you. So getting you still have to uninstall it. It's not like it says, oh, your 24 hours are up. I'm going to leave now. See ya. It stays there. So when you use the tool to remove it, it's possible that the tool caused some other issues. But I don't know how it would have removed removed your browser and removed your email and so forth.
It removed all my wallpaper that I've collected over the last 10 years, everything.
Well, to me, that doesn't sound right.
So what did your wallpaper get changed to?
It got changed to some... it looks like... let me pull it up. It doesn't even look like anything
Is it a picture?
Is it a photo? Is it text?
A pattern?
Is it a color?
Solid color?
It's a blue pattern. I've changed it. I've changed it since then, but it's a blue pattern, and it looks like different levels of.
All right, you need to get a cup of coffee in you, maybe. You want to call back?
No, I got it up and running.
All right, you're struggling,
Dan.
I just want to let you know that, you know, if you can't answer the questions we're asking you in a timely manner, we're going to have to move on. This is not good radio.
What's 47 times 241?
I have no earthly idea. That's
correct.
It looks like a whole bunch of boards laid on top of each other.
It's a default Windows. Yeah.
All right.
Kaleidoscope
now,
type of thing.
So when you just made the decision in your life to go and get this AVG tune-up tool, you did this because you thought, my computer's running perfectly good, but maybe it could run better?
No, it was slow on startup and slow on shutdown and slow on a lot of things.
Yeah, it's possible that whatever was causing that slowness and being weird... was, and I really regret that if this turns into a spyware call, I'm going to turn off the phones. But my suspicion is that you have a problem with your computer, and when you ran this other tool and then you ran the removal, that it just kind of allowed things to kind of spiral out of control. And maybe, I don't know if stuff's gone or if you just lost icons. I don't know what happened exactly, but I think that you have a problem. It got worse when you did this. So I don't know what that problem is. So what I'm going to do, and what I was hoping I would never have to do again on this show, is I'm going to tell you, do you use, besides AVG, do you use any spyware removal tools?
I use Malwarebytes.
Have you scanned the system with that?
Yes, I've scanned it with everything that I've had.
Did it find anything?
No.
Okay. I don't.
I also use Super Spyware.
It won't even
log into it. It just cannot find.
It's hard for me to say what's actually happened to your computer. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go back to, if you've got a 6 month old backup, you could run that and restore that, or you could just go ahead and do a rebuild on the system.
Is the computer running faster without the browsers in the 10 years of wallpaper?
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like it's tuned up. I mean,
it's running great. I mean, it's running. I had I had two root kits on it that I did not know about. I took it in because it was acting weird, and I had a friend of mine do it, and they found two root kits on it.
You've had spyware and you haven't reloaded this system, then you might still have damage.
No, it was reloaded.
Completely.
It was reloaded. Everything was backed up that I had, backed it up, and they took all, and they ran Kaparsky's root tool and everything else, and found two root.
No, okay,
pilots.
I've got that they found root kits. Now, let me finish. Did they format the hard drive and reinstall your operating system from scratch, or did they restore your system from some backup?
They restored the system from backup.
All right, so the backup may also have been infected. or had a problem.
Or had something waiting there to check if the stuff, other stuff was gone and reinstalled it the next time you ran the machine.
So at this point, what I would say, you know, without seeing the system or knowing if you can are dealing with competent technicians or not, is I would consider, you know, first of all, if you've got any, I don't care about wallpaper and I don't care about Firefox and all that stuff. But if you've got any documents that you want to save, if you've got picture files you want to save, go and get those things and put them on an external hard drive and then take the computer and reload it with the factory disks. Just bring it back up like a factory fresh, brand new, and then go back through and install your applications and replace your files.
Right. Okay.
The only way to be certain is if you install from known good clean source. That's the original.
Well, this the backup that I have was the last time it was all cleaned up and everything was cleaned up. Everything was cool.
Well, you
ready
think
to go,
you don't know if you had problems.
And
or
you
not.
Can, it won't take you that long to find out if you've got a backup that's 6 months old. You can try that first and see what you get. It'll be an investment of some time, but if that doesn't work, then you're going to have to go back and try the other method.
Right.
I wish I could say that. Oh yeah, you ran across this, and this is why that stuff's missing.
No, I know.
But it's also at least possible that you've got a faulty piece of hardware, that you might actually have a hard drive where data is corrupting. Another thing that causes a computer to run slow is faulty hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it dozens and dozens of times with computers where when the hard drive starts to fail, you start to lose icons, you start to lose data integrity, and the computer becomes very slow to boot up and to use because the data itself is corrupted because the hard drive that holds the data is damaged or is failing. So how old is the computer?
It's about 4 years old. It's a Mac. It's a HP ProBook.
Okay. I would, you know, I'm sure it has some built-in diagnostics. You might want to run the diagnostics and check out the hardware and make sure the hard drive's okay and so forth. Usually that's a boot option, like when you're with the same menu that would take you to BIOS or sometimes take you to
I even try to go back through System Restore and back almost 2 months worth of before I downloaded this stuff, and it would not go back to System Restore at all.
Well, that's not terribly surprising. System Restore is fairly unreliable.
Okay. I've
used it with some success, and I've used it with some great failures as well. but if the software is damaged, if there's a problem, the Restore is just software, so it's just a little snapshot of your system, and if that becomes damaged, you can't restore it. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Well, I wish you a lot of luck. You know, like I said, I would just consider, you know, maybe trying to restore from backup if you know that's a good clean backup. And, you know, again, if you have any files that were created, if you have any pictures on there or documents or anything that you've created in the last 6 months, go ahead and get those backed up to a hard drive somewhere and then go ahead and restore from backup or restore using the restore disks. All right. 713-526-5738. No spyware calls, no virus calls. If you want to learn how to fight spyware and viruses, go to geekradio.com and click on the spyware link. That document hasn't been updated in a while, but it's still valid.
So I was enthralled. I was trying to find a GitHub repository that I couldn't remember the name of, but it was there 2 weeks ago. Googled for it, couldn't find it, knew it was there, went to Lycos. Lycos had it.
Lycos.
Yeah, and I'm like, what's going on? And then I search, like, you know, Google. Anyway, the issue is it looks like porn companies are going after GitHub, and they're doing all these just blanket takedown requests, and a lot of GitHub is being taken down in the process for some reason.
From copyright issues?
Yeah, from DMCA, I guess. Like anything that I can't say some of these words that are contained in other projects. Well, I guess you can. I don't know. Probably not. I'm just not. But yeah, so apparently, yeah, accidentally.
You can say that.
I can't. I'll let you say it. Yes. So yeah, there are all these DMCA takedowns, and what they're doing is they're just blanketing them out there, but they're taking down a lot of these legitimate GitHub projects.
Hmm.
Oops.
Tell us what GitHub is.
GitHub is just it's a So there's a software versioning control system called Git. And the issue is when you've got lots of developers, lots of people working on one project,
right?
Git, yeah. You've got, oh, that's probably also a British kind of, not a nice term too, possibly.
You said that on the air. We're so fired.
Yeah, oh, no,
That was Linus. Torvalds made up that. And yeah, supposedly, I mean, I read an article at some point, and basically he said like something along the lines of like, I don't like check in, check out systems. Mm-hmm. And this is very complex, and it's a pain, and there's a reason I called it Git.
So yeah, it's just it replaced like Subversion, which replaced like CVS, and the idea is you can just check in code. So the deal is if you need some software, you need something, chances are if someone's got a code repository, they keep it on like, you know, Bitbucket or GitHub, or there's just a handful of them. And this is one of the major ones, and the fact that a lot of people's personal projects, just source code, are being taken down, that's a little troubling. So
yeah, the downside of the cloud online, you know, repositories, things grouped together, is then they're vulnerable to DMCA and those kinds of requests, which in Europe, one thing that's interesting, they're doing copyright. They're rewriting their copyright laws, and the head of the committee that is rewriting them is a member of the Swedish Pirate Party. So there's going to be very different, you know, that doesn't mean that they're going to get everything they want, but it's a measure of how far it's gone, how far things have changed in Europe, that when they're going to make their rules about copyright issues, that there's somebody at the table who is on the kind of more permissive end of the software copyright.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, yeah, this is GitHub. So Google puts out transparency reports for different domains. So GitHub.com, they've taken down like 10,000, and this is just on certain dates. I don't know. I'm guessing LFP Video Group LLC is involved in that industry. 10,000 takedown requests. Devil's Films definitely sounds like that. 10,000 takedown requests. Wicked Pictures, 7,000 takedown requests. I mean, they've pretty much decimated GitHub in the last day and a half.
Jeez.
This is real, you know, so, oops.
Yeah,
is there a news story about that?
There's got to be. Motherboard actually has something that was published just today, on the 7th, so I guess that's today. On IRC. It's probably not the search term you want to Google very freely.
So, on what we were talking about before, though, the long term, if you think about it, this article, I mean, basically makes the point that most of these large providers have gone to where the voice is really going over LTE. They're making the network, except of course, you know, if you have a tablet, you know, he uses the example, a 3 gig data plan from T-Mobile for your iPad Mini is $30 a month. Yet, if instead of an iPad Mini, it's an iPhone 6 Plus, which requires a voice plan, then your phone bill is $60 a month. Where if you're obviously the thing that he doesn't say in the article is, of course, your cell phone, as long as you can get at least one bar, you can make calls, where LTE is only available in major cities and on the highway in the general vicinity of those cities, not everywhere. You know, if you go off the highway 10 or 15 miles, you're probably, there's a lot of places where you're not going to get LTE. But, you know, the phone bill is $60 a month, where $60 would buy you a 9 gig plan on an iPad. And voice over IP is not data intensive. So you could feasibly replace, given a particular situation, one could replace their phone with an iPad and a Bluetooth device, you know, hands free. If you're already carrying, if you carry a laptop around in that bag, you know, you don't have to do the MERS thing. You could just have a really cheap phone, voice phone, and or a small tablet, or somebody will make a 6.5 inch LTE tablet, and all it lacks is the other antenna that your phone uses for 3G and for the cellular.
Well, if I'm making work calls, especially the last few months, if I'm doing like a screen share, if I'm talking to developers, I'll actually just make the call from my laptop because I'm facing the speaker. It's like I'm looking there. That's where I'm directing. I don't have to worry about my phone dying 2 hours later because I didn't charge it. And yeah, it feels a little bit more natural. I'm still not 100% comfy with video calls because, you know, I want to look how I want to look. If I get an itch, I don't have to worry about who's on the other side.
Right.
But, you know, it's not a bad form factor just to, you know, be talking to your laptop, you know, when someone's actually on the other end listening. Yeah, that's nice.
Well, I wonder, you know, what, you know, one of the things that I wonder about, and maybe it's better for an earlier topic in the show, although we have some time left, is, you know, is where it's going. Because, I, you know, the laptop thing, that could take the place, you know, you could, instead of a tablet, you could have your laptop with a Bluetooth device, and if you're carrying that around, then you'd be able to talk on it and do whatever. I just wonder, are we moving to, you know, before I thought cell phones were all moving to where your tech would go in your pockets. That was sort of the limit. And now we've hit, you know, with iPhone 6 Plus, I think we've hit the maximum that you could possibly cram into your, you know, men's pockets.
Well,
you know, Jay and I are aficionados of loose fitting jeans. We're not the skinny jean types.
No, not anymore.
And so there's plenty of pocket room for me for the iPhone 6 Plus.
I think we're gonna have screens and we're gonna have keyboards for a handful more years. But really, I mean, like you said earlier, those are the two things. You're gonna have to have an input device, and that can't shrink down past a certain point. And then you've got to have a display device, and that can't shrink down past a certain point. But I think we're gonna get to where we're gonna have Google Glass style displays. We're not gonna have large displays. It's going to be some kind of a projection, something to where that piece of equipment is so small that it's just, you know, it's somewhere on your body. Maybe it's on the front of your shirt and it projects out in front of you. And then the computer part is going to be small. It's going to be wireless, so it might go in your wallet or it might go somewhere on your body. And it's not something you'd pull out. It would just need to be near you. And I'm thinking, as far as the input devices, you know, it's like we want to have a keyboard and we want something tactical, but that might be the old dude style way of putting in, you know, doing input. It may just be hand gestures and just, you know, whatever it is that you know, is doing the display. Maybe it just looks
dance,
yeah, interpretive
which will
dance.
Make going,
you
know, like, down the street even
it's
more,
I mean, just straight up Minority Report, you know, Minority Report style of things where it's just on the user. So I think, you know, all that stuff is eventually going to evolve away. I've been talking about making a like a little you know, hack together a phone, a cell phone, with open source components, where instead of actually having a phone, you know, you get like one of the magician's fake thumbs and you put, you know, you put something in there, and then the pinky, you put something in there, two little wires, and then to make a phone you just like do the fake, hey, I call me on my phone hand, but then you've got your microphone and you've got your, you know,
don't
I think
even
that's
have
where it's
to have
going.
Like covers up for your fingers, you have embedded
tech. Yeah, just embedded tech, just like hello, you know. But I mean, once you get to that point, I think this is the throwback, and they're just going to implant it in your vocal cords in your ear, and you're just going to be like that. So I think it's, you know, we're going to transcend a lot of this.
I want the fingers up to your head.
I think I just want to make this just for fun. We could do this in,
imagine,
you know,
how that works once you've got implants when you're dealing with obsolescence then. You know, because it's one thing, you've got the drawer full of old tech at your
house.
Got
to upgrade
the
arm.
But when you do, because the thing I thought of with Barrett's idea about, you know, the thumb and pinky that you hold up to your head is, well, you could embed a little speaker in the tip of your thumb and the tip of your pinky, and then use skin conduction, you know, basically use it as a network to power it off.
Just
of
don't
the
stay connected while you're
your
using
stuff.
The bathroom.
Oh, I think that's rude anyway, but that actually puts some bite on that whole proposition.
With a little video camera right on the side of your finger. And
so I'm curious, yeah, what do the grinders think about it, and the H plus people? What
do
they think
about? What
do
the grinders think about?
I don't know. I mean, aside, I don't know what they think about, but what do they think about obsolescence? I mean, that's a very, you know, people are putting RFID chips
into
the skin.
I thought you were talking about
grinder. Oh, no, not those. No. This is
one of those grinders.
Different. And I didn't know grinder was what it was until just a handful of weeks ago. Suddenly a lot of those comments make sense.
You measure time in handfuls. Like he does with most things electronic or on the internet.
No, I'm talking about like body modification people.
Did you see the guy that got the, it was about as big as a deck of cards, plastic encased thing that it's got a battery in it, and it uses induction to recharge the battery, and it gives some like, it's a basic version. It gives some statistics on like his heart rate or something. I remember, anyway, they cut him right here and sliced it and put it like right under his elbow. On the inside of his arm, and he had put a tattoo there, and so there's a light in it that shows that it's powered, and it's like the light goes in the tattoo, but it's like you can see it's like sticking up, like his skin's sticking up because this is shoved under there.
And 6 months later, Fitbit came out and it's got everything in more.
I like the idea of the health report. You can look down at your arm and it says like you were dying of anaphylactic shock. Like, all right, good to know.
The tattoo starts oozing. You're in bed.
We got a call. Do we want to? I don't know what kind of call that is.
I don't know. Groovehouse will tell us.
It's a call. Except you asked for.
It is. All right.
Let's if you've have got it. A computer question,
all right.
It's a call.
Well, I said if it's a good, challenging computer
well,
question.
Well, that's going to be up to you.
No, it's up to you. You're the first line.
You're the phone screener.
Well, I'm just
you're the first
making
line
sure
of
it's
defense.
A computer call. You're the judge of whether or not it's a good call.
Well, okay, then your synopsis needs to be a little bit more than just win XP.
Well,
as a
or else the screen because you can't we can't see all of it. It says win XP, Firefox errors, Flash.
All right, fine. We'll take it.
All right.
Let's put on our 1998 caps.
Here we go. Next up, we're going to speak with Ben.
Ben, you're on the air with Technology Bites, you lucky bastard.
Hey, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Anyways, been having an issue here recently using Firefox on my old XP and getting some sort of errors like for the videos and stuff.
Yes, because your operating system and your browser were never meant to be able to play a lot of the modern videos that are out there on the net, and they're not being updated anymore, and they don't have the codecs. So unless you're just viewing tech sites or going through news groups.
Wait, you're saying that about Firefox on XP?
On XP, yeah. A lot of the codecs, you don't think so?
I think
there's a lot of video on there, isn't it, getting played through
Flash
and Flash.
Yeah.
It should work on XP and Firefox, I would say. But all right, so
it's telling me that it's got the plugins are old or something.
Well, that's fine. Okay, so are you so what happens if you fire up Internet Explorer and look at them?
I mostly just use Firefox.
I understand that, but what happens if you use Internet Explorer?
I haven't checked to see what happens.
I would check to see if it's working in Internet Explorer. At the worst, the only hope you have, really, I think, the only hope you have is to just go ahead and make sure you're running the latest version of Firefox, whatever the latest version is that'll run on XP. And I think I don't know that there's any issues with the current version of Firefox running on XP. But have you updated Firefox in a while? Do you know what version you're using?
I don't remember right off. The last time I checked, it seemed to indicate that it was the most up-to-date version, but I can check it yet.
All right, Firefox no longer works with some versions of Windows XP. I'm seeing that that is actually falling off, so Barrett's there. I would try maybe Internet Explorer and also maybe try Google Chrome and see if one of those will let you play those videos. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily saying that Firefox no longer works with XP. I'm saying a lot of those, the plugins and the Silverlight and some of that stuff isn't getting updated like it should be.
That's possible, but I'm trying to think when the last time I saw an XP machine was. It wasn't that long ago. You're hanging on to, you're hanging on to some rather outdated tech, with Windows XP no longer that's a 10-year-old operating system.
Right.
Or more. It is outdated. It does have problems. Are you running the original install of Windows XP from when you bought the computer, or have you reloaded your system in a while?
No, I got the computer for free, and when I got it, the guy gave me all the disks, so I had to totally rebuild it and stuff.
How long ago was that?
Two or three years, several years.
All right. Well, the issue is that you're trying to play some videos and you're getting flash errors when you're trying to run to view those videos, right?
Yeah.
And so have you gone and downloaded the latest version of Flash?
I'll see about that.
I would do that. I would certainly go see if you go to just Google search download Flash and see if it'll apply the latest version of Flash to what you have. It should detect your browser and install the plugins. Now, I know that certain versions of Firefox have disabled certain versions of Flash plugins, and they're no longer compatible. I would try it in a different browser just to see if it works, to see if there's some other underlying issue that may be causing this.
Okay.
But at the worst case scenario, really, the only hope you have, I think, there's not like a way to go in there there is a way to go in there and kind of tinker around and make sure you've got plugins installed and so forth. But really, what you might benefit from is just wiping out, just remove, uninstall Firefox, just get rid of it completely. Go to the Firefox download page and download a fresh, clean copy of Firefox and install it. And also go through maybe an uninstall Flash and then go to the Flash site and download the latest Flash and let it see that you've got this new version of Firefox or this new install of Firefox. Install the plugins it needs and see if that will solve the problem.
All right.
All right? Your free computer may not be worth what you paid for it.
Well, got an additional question now.
All right.
I was gifted with a brand new shiny Winbook 7 with 8.1 on it. And we're using AT&T UVerse, and I'd like for it to be able to see the printers that I've got there, one of which is an HP 1000 LaserJet. But I've found that HP has chosen not to write current new drivers for the 1000.
So you're saying it's running Windows 8?
8.1.
You should, I mean, not knowing too much about that particular printer, you should be able to use just some generic
See if there's one available, because I'm looking on their website and they have it for Mac, they have it for XP, Vista, and Windows 8.1. I just went to the HP website. The HP DeskJet 1000 printer
has the LaserJet.
Huh?
The LaserJet 1000.
I'm not sure if this is a laser jet or not, but it's an HP DeskJet 1000, so you're saying a LaserJet 1000.
Yeah, it's a laser printer, not a inkjet printer.
Let's see. Have you gone to the website?
I'm not seeing anything past Microsoft 7. XP.
They don't support it in Windows 7, so no support for Windows 8.
The only, in this situation that Barrett was going to mention, is you might be able to run it in an emulation mode. You might be able to install an emulation printer. You'd have to do some research to see if it emulates any other more common printers, like an HP 4. What is it? The 4.
Yeah, there. I think if you go to the drivers, there's probably going to be like a generic HP laser printer, and then there's also going to be, I think it's like, is it PCL5/6? Flicktube would know this, but there's some generic HP and IBM print drivers that most of those still work for, and I want to say it's PCL5.
PCL5 or PCL6.
Yeah, PCL6. Look for one of those too, and you can't do like awesome color display kind of things and double paged, and not that printer would do it anyway, but it'll print solid text and still look good.
Well, that's primarily what I'm looking to try and do, is just print text and, you know, whatever happens to come through, kind of a deal.
I've got an HP, an L400 that I bought in 93 that's still going strong, and it prints what I need it to do.
Yeah.
Black and white, but I mean, it looks good. So, yeah, keep it going.
How do I tell the 8.1 to look and find the other printers that are in my home network?
How are those printers connected to your network?
There's two printers.
No, I understand there's two of them, but how are they?
Talk to the other computers that are on my old network.
How are they connected to the network?
Wi-Fi.
So they are Wi-Fi printers.
Well, no.
So how are they connected?
I've got two computers connected in my network at home.
And are they connected to the network, or are they connected to a computer that's on the network?
Okay, The LaserJet 1000 is connected to a printer.
The HP 1000 is a printer.
You actually have serial printers?
To a print server that's on the network.
Okay, so you have a print server that's connected via Ethernet to your network.
Yes.
All right. So are they? And they? So
so that should have an IP.
Not necessarily. Well, the print server should have an IP.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But it also has like parallel ports on the print server, right?
Right, but the print server has an IP, which is what you would use to get to it to send it a print job. You would use LPR or IPP or some protocol to send it over the network to that IP to send it to the printer.
So when you set up this print server, do you know the IP address of the print server?
I don't recall what it is off.
I tell you what, you're probably going to need to find somebody to come over and have a look. I can't tell you what your network looks like or how this is set up, but it's a troubleshooting and working with network issues is a complex idea and a complex concept.
And when you throw in obsolete technology supporting it.
Well, when you throw
it
in,
makes it much more difficult.
Well, also when you throw in the fact that you don't seem to know the answers to some of the questions that you need to know the answers to be able to troubleshoot, we can't tell you what that is.
Right.
But so, right. so what you right. so when it comes, I haven't used a print server in forever. But if it has an IP address and you can figure out what the IP address is, then you might be able to throw that IP into, you know, when you're connecting to, you know, when you go into the printer setup, connect to a network printer, you should be able to put in the IP address of the print server, and maybe Windows will see what's connected to it. But it really is outdated or obsolete technology. What you need to have, or what is going to benefit you, is to have a printer that will connect to your Wi-Fi and be a standalone device connected to your network. And then you can install software that will tell that computer to look for that printer. It'll see it on the network. It'll install the drivers and allow you to print to it.
Yeah, or okay. have all of your computers have modern operating systems that can share a connected printer out to the network and be seen.
Right. I mean, even with Windows XP, you could connect a printer to the computer. Then you go through the sharing process and share that printer out to the network so that then you connect via the host name. But there are some network concepts here that are a little bit dry for on the air, trying to troubleshoot and figure out. But you can also, there's plenty of online resources that talk about how to connect to a printer that's connected to a print server, how to share a printer using Windows, whatever version of Windows you're using. There are ways to do it, but it's a little bit more involved than what we're capable of doing on this show tonight. All right, okay. So I wish you a lot of luck, and thanks for your call. All right, so Groovehouse, I see we have another call in the queue.
We might want to wait.
We do? All right.
We're almost out of time, too.
Yeah. Almost out of time.
Yeah, coming up to 10 minutes. O'clock.
Yeah.
Ah, what the heck.
Okay, why not?
Why not?
See if you can work the geek gathering into this call.
Yeah. All right.
All right, up next, we're going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. That was real funny. I was wondering if I was going to get on or not.
Well, we'll see if he can stay on.
Jay Lee's back.
Actually, you'll have to bring your network to the Geek Gathering this Friday at Comms.
So what do you got for me, John?
Friday at where?
No.
Sorry, that was a joke.
Never mind.
Just listen to Jay.
You guys are funny.
Yeah, haha. All right.
Here's my question. My Yahoo.com mail site, I was looking at the emails, and for the longest time, it had pages. You could click on page one, go to page two, go to page three. And all of a sudden, that switched without me doing anything to an infinite scroll down of all of the emails. And recently, that switched again without me doing anything to where you can only see the top three emails, and below that, it has a great big envelope. And I need to know how to switch that back to the infinite scroll down and possibly back to the page turner.
Well, so you didn't change anything to make it change to what you've got.
Correct.
My battery just died on my laptop.
I haven't logged into Yahoo Mail in years.
Chances are it's a new feature.
Well, I know that Yahoo has changed their they've got what they call classic Yahoo and the new Yahoo, and the interface has changed. I don't use Yahoo. Go ahead, what did
there
you
is, find? I'm just looking this up. I haven't used Yahoo either, but there is settings, and you can actually go and decide, you know, tell it how you want to view your email. I'm trying to figure out where that is. What you're probably seeing now, that big envelope, I think that's probably the preview pane. So, you know, you just see, like, you know, a very small list and then just whatever. You know what you should be able to do? There should be a bar in between the preview pane and your list of messages. If you move your mouse up and down around that, if it changes, click your mouse button and pull that down, and I bet you anything, you can pull down to see a lot more messages and have a little bit less of your message bar at the bottom.
That sounds very intelligent.
Yeah.
I'll give that a try.
Well, give it a shot. Maybe if you're having trouble with it still by next week, call in earlier in the show, and we'll see if we can sort it out.
Google Yahoo preview pane, and that'll get you in there and show you how to make some changes to how your email looks.
One more quick question?
Nope. No, sorry, we're out of time.
We're out of time for the show. No, really.
Go ahead, hang on.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye. Yeah, we are literally out of time. All right, well, you're listening to Technology Bites. It's 2015, woohoo.
De-gathering.
De-gathering.
Like the same old show.
Friday.
That's Friday, 7:30, 2808,
well,
we've got
to get Lee back in the studio and just get everything to gel back together, you know, but we're good. we'll get this all sorted out. Geek Gathering is this Friday at Cons. You can go to geekradio.com.
And at the Mexican restaurant next door.
And at the Mexican restaurant next door. You can bring your print server. Your what?
Girlfriends?
Yeah, you can
wives.
You have a girlfriend now, you can bring her. No longer have to bring your imaginary girlfriend.
Those are still welcome though.
Yes, we're all for diversity in tech, and we've had women showing up for a long time.
All right, got to go. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Yay.
Three sad facts. All over the world, more than 80% of forest cover has been lost to deforestation. Topsoil is lost much faster than it's being created, and a half of all species are threatened with extinction, mainly by industrial activity. Until now, the past 300 million years, about one species was going extinct every 4 years. But now, scientists see one species go extinct every 15 minutes. This environmental destruction can only be changed when you act. Deep Green Resistance says standing up and speaking out is the only hope for our planet. To learn more, visit deepgreenresistance.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Up next, yes.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up. And each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT.org, Twitter.com/KPFT, Facebook.com/KPFT Houston.